Welcome to the BetUS College Football Show. This is the Wednesday, December 27th edition of the show. It is our last bowl preview show of the season. It's part number six. I'm your host, Gary Seegers. You can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at GaryWCE, or I am on X at Winning Cures. Let's go on and get the boys in here. We got some games that we really got a deep dive today, so let's get this train rolling. On the right side of the screen, of course, the handicapper of the decade, our award-winning professional handicapper. He is at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. He is Kyle Hunter, my friend. Massive games on the slate today. We're talking CFP. How are you feeling, my friend?
We can sign up for another day like yesterday.
Oh, we need that.
I can sign up for that because those are far more enjoyable. I like that.
when we can win a bet on every single game on the board, I'll take those days any day of the year. Like, give us more of those, please. On the left side of the screen, of course, our numbers guy, our analyst. I call him the numerical guru. He is at Stats of War on X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it. Parker Fleming. Parker. Tell me, have you spoken to the gambling gods about today's games yet?
Yeah, I went up on the mountain yesterday and got some insight. It's kind of sad seeing we're getting to the end of bowl slate here. It's like, you know, college football season is a grind and then it's over all of a sudden. So still some good games to watch, still some good plays to make, and really excited to get into these today. I think we've got a good mix of some of the big time games, but also there's some diamonds in the rough here with a couple of these quote unquote lesser bowls too. So really excited to get into these and be back here on the show today, especially after I believe that was a 4-0 day yesterday for us. I don't want to toot our own horn, but I will a little bit. I think looking at the sheet, that was 4-0 yesterday, which is always good to have.
That's it. Let me knock on wood. Let me cross my fingers, cross my toes, like whatever we need to do to keep this thing rolling. I think we've won five straight on the BetUS show, so keep it rolling. We got to keep it rolling. Before we kick everything off, of course, let's talk about winning prizes. You guys know what's up. Let's get the graphic on the screen. BetUS celebrating its 30th season by giving away a tough truck. And you can visit betustv.com/toughtruck for more info. Of course, you guys know here on the BetUS College Football Show, we are giving away one entry per show to win the truck. So we've got this one, we've got our national title preview, and then we've got our national title props preview. Preps, props, whatever. Regardless, we're giving away an entry every show to win the truck, along with some other fun prizes, right? Tailgating packages, tickets to football games, etc. The key, of course, is you got to be watching live, and you got to be a member of BetUS. And you can do that by visiting betustv.com/join. Parker, if people wanted to win this truck, can you tell them specifically what they need to do today?
Super easy. If you can't, if you don't already know, all you got to do, you got to subscribe to the channel so you can hop in the chat. You got to be a member at BetUS. And then all you got to do is just type in who you think has the golden ticket, one of me, Gary, or Kyle. And what we'll do is at the end of the games before the Q&A, we will reveal one of us randomly chosen has it. And if you are correct, then what our producers will do, will put all the names of all the correct people in a hat. They'll pull one out and that person will win an entry there. So you just got to type in the chat which one of the three of us you think has the golden ticket.
Wonderful. You explained it perfectly. Perfectly. All right. We are here every Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern time for the season. Next week, of course, we'll be here on Tuesday, January 2nd. The week after that, we'll be here on Monday, January the 8th, for the national championship game. There's a chance I might be coming to y'all live from Houston. We'll figure that out next week. But regardless, we don't ask a lot from you guys. But Kyle, if you could do me a favor, can you tell everybody how they can help out the channel?
Yeah, just hit the thumbs up button down there. That helps us a lot for sure. And hit the notifications bell so you know when we're going live. Like Gary said, it'll be a little bit different with a Tuesday and then a Monday show. So hit that bell as well so you know when we go live the next couple weeks.
You got it. That notification bell is uber importante. I think that's how you say that. Of course, make sure and do the same thing for Jared, Fez, and Las Vegas Chris on the BetUS NFL show. They're with you every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. That season runs a little longer. So they're going to be with you through the entire NFL season as well, through the playoffs, et cetera. And they will be here later on today in just a little while, as a matter of fact. Gentlemen, let's go on and recap our records thus far on the season. A nice 4-0 day in the three bowls yesterday. So let's hope the winning ways continue. I am now 46-49-4. Kyle, 36-40-2. Parker is now 43-41-3. That puts us at 125-130-9. That's not too bad. Let's keep our fingers crossed. We got a lot of plays over the next few days. Our whole goal has been to get back above 500. We're right there. All right. You can get in on the action at betustv.com/join. If you want to track the odds along with us, of course, you can visit betustv.com/odds. For all of you guys that are watching live, and I see a bunch of you in here, Joey May, Cooper Haney, Quiet One, Kenneth Collins, Jesse Fox, etc., toss in some questions for the Q&A segment to close things out. So anything that you want to talk about, you want to talk about coaching changes, you want to talk about these games, you want to talk about games that we've already discussed, but maybe the line has moved because they've opened up the limits a little bit, anything you want to talk about, toss it in the chat, and we will hit it at Q&A at the end of the show. All right, fellas. We got the last six bowl games to discuss. Let's go on and get after it. Game number one. Now we're going to head to the, well, this one's going head-to-head with the Orange Bowl on Saturday, December 30th. It is the Barstool Arizona Bowl at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch this one on Barstool's website or their YouTube channel, or from what I understand, for the first time, you can watch it on the CW. And we got a fun one here, I think, between the Toledo Rockets and the Wyoming Cowboys. Wyoming is a 3.5-point favorite at BetUS with a total of 44.5. Toledo quarterback Daquan Finn has transferred to Baylor, so it looks like Tucker Gleason going to be the starter here. He hasn't thrown a pass in a game since September, but he does have 4 touchdowns and no interceptions, so who knows, right? The left guard, Skiri, and the cornerback Mitchell, they could be out for this one as well. Who knows? We'll see. As for Wyoming, the head coach Craig Bohl is retiring after the game, and the offensive coordinator Tim Pulisic is going to be the next head coach at North Dakota State. The starting cornerback Colby Taylor is in the portal, but he didn't play in the final 2 games of the season. Other than that, it looks like this Wyoming team is ready to roll. We shouldn't have too many opt-outs, anything like that. Should be fired up. Wyoming went 3-2 straight up and against the spread in their last 5 games. Toledo was 4-1 straight up, 3-2 against the spread. Wyoming is 5-3 straight up, 6-1-1 against the spread all time in bowl games. Toledo is the opposite end of the spectrum as far as that is concerned. They are 1-4 straight up, 0-5 against the spread in their last 5 bowl games. Kyle, let's start with you on this. The Wyoming coach, Craig Bohl, announced, you know, he's going to retire after this game, and the number moved pretty dramatically. It was initially Toledo -1. It got out to Wyoming -4. Now there's been a little bit of buyback on Toledo. Part of it, I think, is because of Toledo's, you know, putrid bowl record compared to Wyoming's, but you toss on that bowl news and everyone believes that motivation is purely on the Cowboys' side. How are you breaking this one down?
Well, Gary, I think there's 2 options here. You either bet Wyoming in some way or you pass. The problem is the line has moved so much. I did bet Wyoming here in this one. I do like them to win the game. The question is, you know, if you're taking -1 or a money line, then you're taking 3.5 or 4. Wyoming plays a lot of close games. That's a pretty big difference in their games, especially with totals set as low as this. You know, I think as far as coaching mismatches, is there a bigger coaching mismatch in a bowl game than Craig Bohl versus Jason Candle? You know, Candle did a good job this year. They didn't really have that horrible game, but he's 1-5 against the spread in bowl games. And some of them were really, really bad performances, like losing significantly as a big favorite. Craig Bohl is 12-3 against the spread in postseason games. So coaching mismatch here, Juan Finn out. I think Tucker Gleason is a pretty decent backup. There's definitely a drop-off from Finn to Gleason. Toledo's offensive line is kind of their strength. And if you're looking for one advantage for Toledo, it would be their run game, 19th in offensive line yards, Wyoming 78th in defensive line yards. But I think this is a Wyoming team that played such a tougher schedule, 75th Sagarin strength of schedule, 125th on the other side. So motivation factor with Craig Bohl's last game, big coaching advantage. Also, Toledo a long ways from home, obviously. I think Wyoming or nothing. And I really considered Wyoming -3.5 here for the show, but just a strong lean for me.
I feel good about it. I bet Wyoming at -1. But, man, this got a little bit rich. Parker, you start to look into the actual advanced stats, right? There's not a number that I can find over the last 6 weeks of the season that's going to point you towards Wyoming winning this game. But 4, just a bit too rich, even though I already took it at 1. The Toledo offense is likely going to take a hit with Finn being out. He was number 46 in the country in usage rate this season. But the strength of Toledo's team has been their defense, right? Vince Karras has done a really good job on that side of the ball. Over the last 6 weeks, they're number 14 in PPA allowed per drive. They're number 12 in defensive success rate. The Wyoming offense hadn't been great. Number 83 PPA per drive, number 60 in success rate. Is there a matchup here that maybe doesn't point Toledo's way? What are you seeing on it?
I think there's two that really stand out for me here. One, obviously, both of these teams are going to run the ball a lot. So we're looking at low, the clock's going to move a bunch, low number of plays, maybe a low total here. But 94th in rush rate over expected for Toledo with Finn and a quarterback. So certainly going to be run heavy without him. And then 89th for Wyoming on the season. I'm interested in a couple of things that point Wyoming's way and will support Kyle's strong lean here. Certainly liked it better. I think we said that last week. Someone asked, and I said, you're probably too late on Wyoming. I have it exactly at 3, so I'm not super comfortable with a 3.5 there. Wyoming is 69th in EPA per rush. Toledo is 96. That's adjusting for opponent. They've been okay in success rate, but they have allowed some explosive plays. Additionally, Wyoming has a huge field position advantage against Toledo. Wyoming, 38th in starting field position on offense. Toledo is 83rd in starting field position allowed there. And Toledo's been very good on early downs. They're 20th overall, but that's where Wyoming's been pretty good as well, 45th in early downs EPA. I think that, especially with the run game, who can stay ahead of the chains is going to matter a whole lot. Here, Wyoming, 68th in offensive success rate. Toledo, unadjusted, is 22nd there. So, staying on schedule is going to be super important in this game. I don't think there's a huge, huge talent, gap here per se, but I think Toledo is certainly going to have some better athletes at key spots. Obviously, the pass game with the cornerback King, who might Mitchell King is not on this team. Quinyon Mitchell is going to potentially opt out, but I haven't seen anything that he's not going to play. Should certainly help this pass defense and just kind of take away even the credible threat. I mean, with a guy like that and the receivers that Wyoming has, you do have the opportunity to really just kind of stack the box and say, I dare you to beat us one on one because I don't think you can. Outside. So I think this is going to be a close back and forth game. I like having Wyoming a little bit closer there is certainly advantageous. One number to watch here for me, because I don't have a lean, is just going to be the yards after contact. So Whaley for Wyoming, 3.68 yards after contact per rush, and then Boone for Toledo, 4.36. I certainly don't associate Wyoming's defense with poor tackling. And so who can kind of generate those after contact explosive rushes and who can prevent those after contact explosive rushes? I think that's really where the game is going to come down to, is just who can make the tackles at first point of contact, who can stifle those kind of second effort explosives, because both of those teams have really thrived on those in the run game all season.
You are speaking my language with this. Basically, we're all leaning Wyoming and none of us likes the number where it is right now. So if this thing gets back down to 3, I think all of us would be willing to jump back in on it. But over 3, knowing that Wyoming has won multiple games by 3 points this year, we will stay away from it. So no official play on this one right now, but certainly lean towards Craig Bowl and the Cowboys getting it done in his last game in Laramie. Moving on, game number 2 here. Oh, yes, we move to Monday. January 1st, we get a new year. And, of course, the day when most of the games used to be on. At 12 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2, we have the ReliaQuest Bowl, where the Wisconsin Badgers and the LSU Tigers are going to face off down in Tampa. LSU currently a 10-point favorite at BetUS with a total of 56 on this. The biggest news thus far is the LSU offensive coordinator, Mike Denbrock, taking the Notre Dame OC job. And, of course, the Heisman quarterback, Jaden Daniels, is going to sit out this bowl game. We could potentially see the wide receivers, Neighbors and Thomas, opt out. Although, I will tell you, Neighbors only needs 22 yards to be LSU's all-time receiving yards leader. So chances are he'll probably play at least a little bit. The Tigers do have several backups in the portal. They got a bunch of injuries still in the back seven on defense. Wisconsin, I mean, this is just a mess, right? The running back, Braylon Allen, has opted out along with the starting center, the starting cornerback. There's four other starters in the portal. You got two wide receivers, an offensive lineman, and a linebacker. In the injury list, I mean, I think the Badgers are going to be on their fourth string running back. There's another wide receiver that's out. You got another cornerback that's out. The Badgers are going to be thin here, especially at skill position. So do with that what you will. They are going to have their quarterback, though. So, you know, LSU went 4-1 straight up, 3-1-1 against the spread down the stretch. Wisconsin was 2-3 straight up, 2-2-1 against the number in their last five games. Wisconsin always shows up for bowl season. They are 8-1 straight up in their last nine bowl games, 6-2-1 against the spread. And normally that would really make you lean Wisconsin, but LSU shows up as well. They are 6-2 straight up and against the spread in their last eight bowl games. So it hasn't depend or like none of it matters with the coaches. These are the kind of teams that just show up in bowl season. Kyle, let's start with you on this. Brian Kelly has talked multiple times about the importance of winning 10 games in a season. Last year, we saw him hang 63 on just a completely outclassed Purdue team in that bowl game. Daniels is not playing, but Garrett Nussmeier has shown over the years he is plenty good enough for the Tigers to do some damage with this offense, especially, you know, with the multiple defensive starters out for the Badgers. Now, Fickell versus Brian Kelly, I think, is a fun matchup. What are you expecting in Tampa here?
Well, I mean, I think year one for Luke Fickell, definitely a disappointment for Badgers fans, especially based on expectations that were pretty high. I still think he'll do pretty well there, and I'm not going to get really low on Fickell like some people are. But, you know, to me here, Garrett Nussmeier, is he like maybe the best backup in the country? He's definitely one of the best backups in the country. So obviously a drop off from Jaden Daniels. That's obvious. We don't really have to say that, but he's very good. Malik Nabers saying he would play here is kind of surprising, but it might be one of those spots where he doesn't play too much. So if you want to take a prop under, that would probably be a good bet. Braylon Allen out, at least fancy guys for Wisconsin out. And Gary, you said Wisconsin does have their starting quarterback, but he hasn't been very good. You know, he really was just okay at the best. They were 128th in offensive explosiveness. I think LSU is going to hit big plays on Wisconsin, even without Daniels here. LSU's defense, though, was so bad, it kind of ruined a great chance for a really special season. I mean, they had a great offense. The defense just had to be decent, and they couldn't. They were 103rd in defensive line yards. I think Wisconsin might be able to run it on them some, even without those key running backs. I would lean to the over in this game, or maybe a LSU team total over, thinking that Wisconsin's defense is just not good enough here. I would probably lean toward LSU minus 10. It's just really tough with so many guys opting out. We haven't seen these teams in this, in the state that they will be in this game. We have no idea what these teams are. So it's tough for me. I lean LSU or maybe a team total over.
Yeah, I think I was shocked at just how bad LSU's defense has been this year. Now, obviously, Wingo going out, you know, middle of the year, that certainly didn't help things. They had their entire secondary was basically out at some point with injuries, and you're relying on freshmen and trying to, it was just a mess. But I think the bigger thing was the fact that the defensive line was just not very good. Parker, let's move over to you here. I think that the more fun thing to watch than this game might be the Tiger and Badger fans on New Year's Eve down in Tampa. Because, I mean, my goodness, when they get together, they absolutely drink everybody out of everything, and who knows what kind of trouble they can get into down there in Florida. Looking at the numbers, though, of course, for this game, LSU has been number 2 in standard down success on offense over the last 6 weeks. Wisconsin has been number 86 on defense. There is a chance that LSU can stay just well ahead of the chains here. And if they do end up in third downs, they're number 1 in the country over the past 6 weeks in third down conversion percentage. Wisconsin's defense is number 75 in that metric. Now, that might change, obviously, because you don't have the wheels of Jaden Daniels to be able to get you out of some of these tight spots. And as good as LSU's offense is, their defense, as we just talked about, is just atrocious. Even with as bad as LSU's defense is, I don't know that I trust Phil Longo's Badgers offense, right? What's your breakdown here, Parker?
Yeah, well, I will say the LSU and Wisconsin fans, I have been to games with both of them for TCU, the Rose Bowl for Wisconsin, and then they played at Jerry World, TCU and LSU. And I had some TCU friends who weren't necessarily familiar with the SEC starting to taunt the LSU fans in the parking lot, and I was like, guys, that's how you get killed. Like, this is let them do their thing, offer them a beer, let's just get in the stadium. Come on. So yeah, Tampa bars, order more beer. You don't have enough. And I think you can account for the gravity of Jaden Daniels for LSU's offense. Absolutely. Like, a great Heisman season. I wish he wasn't opting out, but I understand the incentives there for him not to do so. And Nussmeier is fine. This offense is first in EPA per pass and EPA per rush. They're first in Ekeler rate. They're third in points per Ekeler. They're first in early down success, and they're seventh in third and fourth down success. That, Daniels, huge, huge part of it, but it's not like they're going to become the worst offense in the nation without Daniels there, especially as Nussmeier is competent as a passer. You look at LSU's wide receiver room. If Neighbors and Thomas both play, which so far I have the indication that they are, that's about 57% of LSU's targets go to both of them. And you're looking at 3.81 yards per route run for Neighbors, 2.65 for Thomas, both of them with an average depth of target greater than 12 and a half, both of them with more than 6 yards after reception. I'm looking at the opt-outs, and I'm looking at Wisconsin's secondary, and I don't know who can cover them. You have Hallman for Wisconsin, who's 83.4 coverage grade, has the most coverage snaps, but behind him it gets really, really rough. Matry is going to be out for Wisconsin, I think I saw, but he's has the second most snaps at corner. He's got a 61.9 coverage grade. Then you start looking at Fourquan is going to play. Is he going to take the bigger role? He's had a 57.6 PFF coverage grade in his limited roles this season. I really just think that the cornerback room for Wisconsin gets so thin against these just NFL athletes over at LSU. So pass game advantage absolutely to LSU here. And LSU's defense has really been bad in the secondary. I think that's been the biggest issue, is just that they really, really have trouble kind of shoring up their front seven. Their front seven hasn't been great, but the secondary has been so injury laden. And frankly, as we heard Brian Kelly say at the beginning of the season, just not solid up and down. They're 99th in EPA per pass, but they are 82nd in EPA per rush. Knowing Wisconsin's got some issues, knowing that Wisconsin's not going to have Braylon Allen in the backfield, it's possible LSU can be a little bit more strategic towards shoring up the run game there as well. One number to watch out that'll make a ton of difference, I think, and really help. Wisconsin is 77th in starting field position on offense, starting at their own 28.8 yard line. LSU is 15th in starting field position allowed, 26.6. Now, a lot of that is Daniels not making mistakes, so most of their transitions are, deep punts or kickoffs and not interceptions. But still, if they can avoid that kind of mistake-free ball, I think that they'll be able to really push Wisconsin into these long, long drives, which is going to be great for LSU because Wisconsin is 93rd in quality possession rate. They're only generating a quality possession on 37.8% of their drives. That's not good enough at all. Wisconsin, not very good at early downs. They're 68th. So even as LSU's defense is 99th, that's still a weak point for LSU or for Wisconsin there. I'm just not sure the Badgers can score. My notes had LSU minus anything. And so I'm going to take the Tigers minus 10 here. I've got this by over, 15 and a half by my numbers. So I really like LSU in the spot, even with the opt-outs. And I'm going to take the Tigers here in this game.
I personally bet LSU minus 7.5. I hit it again at 8 when I got a little more news. 10, I'm staying away from, but let's lock this in for Parker. I like your thoughts there. LSU minus anything. Brian Kelly, the guys in the chat said it. He is certainly willing to run up the score, especially against the Big Ten. So, yeah, get to that 10th win. Let's lock it in for Parker. He's going to take LSU minus the 10 here. All right, quick reminder, hit the like button for us. That little button right there certainly helps us out. Of course, make sure that you are subscribed to the channel. Hit the notification bell so that you know when we go live. And leave a comment. We want to know your picks on the games. For you guys watching live, you see the truck on the screen there. You know what you're doing here. Go on and put in your guess for who has the golden ticket so that you can be entered in to win the Tough Truck. And, of course, while you're watching live, get your questions in for Q&A at the end of the show. Don't forget about the podcast, the BetUS Football Show, in your favorite podcast app. That is the NFL show and the college football show put right there together in one nice little feed. The NFL show, of course, every Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern. All right, carrying on, we move to game number 3, and we are staying on New Year's Day for this one. It's at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on ABC, the Citrus Bowl. And as Steve Spurrier used to say, you cannot spell citrus without UT. And, of course, they are now in the game again. The Tennessee Volunteers are going to take on the Iowa Hawkeyes. And this one, to me, is one of the more interesting coaching matchups of the entire bowl season. Tennessee now is a 6.5-point favorite. That's right. Total of 35 over at BetUS. The number has moved drastically just in the past few hours. Tennessee, super thin on defense with all the injuries. And now, of course, they've got 4 cornerbacks in the transfer portal that all had 149 or more snaps on the season. The edge rusher, Tyler Barron, he is headed to Ole Miss. The running back, Jalen Wright, has opted out of the bowl game. And, of course, we got the news this morning that Joe Milton is opting out of the game. Now, on the other side, the Hawkeyes have been dealing with injuries all year, but the right tackle, Dunker, didn't play in the Big Ten title game. Their wide receiver, Deontay Vines, is in the portal as well. Let's just be honest. This game's kind of a mess to figure out right now, right? Iowa went 4-1 straight up, but only 2-3 against the spread in their last 5. Tennessee was 3-2 straight up, 2-3 against the spread as well. Iowa 4-1 straight up, 4-0-1 against the spread in their last 5 bowl games. Tennessee 5-1 straight up, 4-2 against the spread in their last 6 bowl games. Kyle, I'm going to start with you on this one again. My power rating for the full season has Tennessee minus 11. But my stats model for the last 6 weeks has Iowa favored by 2.5. Iowa is 6-3-1 against the spread in their last 10 against the SEC. And when you look at the matchup, the defense appears to match up pretty well with Tennessee's offense. How do you start your handicap here?
I feel like I might have drawn like the short straw and I have to talk first about this one. I don't know what to do. What a total. How could you bet this total? I mean, I was kind of hoping one of you guys would bet the total because I have no idea what to do with the total in this game.
35, can I tell you a secret? I got 36.5 under, and that was before Joe Milton announced that he was out. So
there you go. But if you'd have told us before the year that a Tennessee game was going to have a total of 35, I would have thought you were absolutely nuts, like crazy. But now, somehow, in a way that only Iowa football can be, 35 is kind of a high Iowa total. Like, I mean, that's legit, fairly high for them. Fast-paced offense is kind of sputtered at times at Tennessee against an elite defense. And, the Iowa punt team, they're really good for sure. Look, Barron's is a great coach. He does a very good job. He's 12-6-1 against the spread in bowl games. I kind of personally like to root for Iowa because it makes no sense that they win so many games, and yet here they do. It hasn't really stopped them that they're terrible offensively to win these bowl games in the last decade. They've been very good. Virtually the whole Tennessee secondary is in the portal. Against most teams, that would really matter a lot. Does that matter a lot against Iowa? I think that's up for debate. Iowa's defense is so good. I often think about, probably too much, but I often think about how good this Hawkeyes team could be if they had a slightly below average offense. They don't have to be good. I just have to be okay.
Just something. Just give me something, yeah, right?
I mean, I think that this is one where if I bet the total and I lost, I'd really hate myself because why can I bet this? Now, maybe you guys like the under and I could understand that. As far as a side, I would have to lean toward Iowa here in this one because there are so many unknowns for Tennessee. I know Nico should get the start here. Quarterback, we don't really know what he'll be. Oh, his defense is really good. I mean, no matter who they play against, they are very fundamentally strong. We play a lot of close, low-scoring games. I trust Ferentz more than Heupel to get the team ready for a bowl game. So I have to lean Iowa here.
We'll move over to you, Parker. We couldn't let you get through bowl season without talking about the Iowa Hawkeyes, my friend. It doesn't look like we're missing a bunch from the Iowa team, right, as far as the portal is concerned and whatnot. Tennessee, with the 4 cornerbacks out and the edge rusher and the 1,000-yard rusher and all that. And, of course, how fitting that your preseason draft hype quarterback, Joe Milton, decided that he did not want to close out his career against Phil Parker. I don't think he would want that film out there, I would imagine. What are you looking at when you break down this ball game? What's your breakdown here?
Yeah, I'm looking at a couple of things. One, I'm looking at Nico, the highly touted freshman for UT, kind of making his first start and serious performance against a relatively full-strength Iowa defense. That doesn't seem super great to me, especially when you consider that Tennessee has been mostly a screen-heavy team. Now, maybe with Nico, they can get the deep ball a little bit more, but in his limited time, he has about the same exact kind of split of what Milton does. Joe Milton threw 27.1% of his dropbacks were screens. That's the highest in the nation among starters. Tennessee really, really, I mean, almost comically compared to last year, cannot get the ball down the field. And I don't necessarily know it's Milton's arm or his decision-making so much as it is the athletes on the wideouts for Tennessee have been significantly a step down from last season. And I don't think that's insulting any of them, given, you know, how good some of those guys were last year and the combination of Milton being a little bit shaky. So I'm just not sure that Tennessee has an offense that can challenge Iowa. Iowa has 90 total missed tackles on the season. You start looking at, what is that, 13 games, 14 games? That is not a lot of missed tackles per games. And for the screen game to work, you're going to need your athletes in space to force some missed tackles. I'm not very excited about Tennessee's ability to do that. If we look up the matchup at the team level, you know, Tennessee's offense is only 27th. They've been fine. Iowa's defense, 14th in the nation, 15th against the pass, 16th against the run. Tennessee has not been good at finishing drives this year, 121st in points per quality possession. It's a combination of low explosive touchdowns, again, compared to last year, not good, and a combination of not finishing once they get across the 40. Iowa is first in points per ECHL. When you cross the line against Iowa, you cross the 40-yard line against Iowa, you're scoring 1.79 points per drive. So freshman quarterback, really good defense. I kind of got scared off the total just because I think Tennessee's offense could implode to the point where Iowa gets multiple defensive scores, and that's going to kind of ruin your total there. So I'm going to go with Iowa to keep this low and keep this close, though. It was, like you said, Gary, just a few minutes before the show was much more favorable. But here, even at 6.5, I'm going to ride with Iowa because I do think they could win this outright. I've got this closer to 2 points in like a 55-45 game at full strength. So all the movement certainly leans towards Iowa here for me.
I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to take the points with Iowa as well. And full disclosure, I bet this Iowa +8.5 and +8 already. We joke about it, but this is the offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz's last game with the Hawkeyes, and nobody's really been talking about them as one of the more motivated teams in bowl season. But gentlemen, we saw their reaction with Brian when they wrapped up the Binghamton West. Phil Parker against Josh Heupel, I think, is going to be a fantastic matchup. I think Iowa's defense is going to confuse the new kid, Nico Iamalieva, who has, I think I nailed that time.
Love
That's
it.
Awesome. he's not gotten a lot of snaps this year. But I think he would have confused Joe Milton, too. Like, you don't have your 1,000-yard rusher. I think Tennessee, they're going to want to show up here. But Iowa, in these games, especially these, you know, New Year's Day games, they always show up. I'm going to trust them again here, even though it's under a touchdown. Parker and I both going to take Iowa +6.5, as you see there on your screen. So I wish you could have gotten this at a better number earlier, but... you know, news travels whenever it does. News travels when it does. All right, moving on. Game number 4 on the docket today. And we move to the last New Year's Six game before the playoff games. The Fiesta Bowl, where the Liberty Flames from Conference USA are going to take on the Oregon Ducks at 1 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. Oregon, currently a 17-point favorite at BetUS. The total sits at 67. Liberty is going to have the majority of their roster available. There are some defensive backups in the portal on the defensive line and in the secondary. The starting linebacker, Jolly, and the safety, Jones, didn't play in the conference title game. Haven't seen anything that said they're not going to play here. The backup quarterback is out as well, but he's transferring. It is what it is. For Oregon, the quarterback, Bo Nix, and the running back, Bucky Irving, said that they're playing in the game, but... then you start getting into everything else, right? The center, Jackson Powers Johnson, the nose tackle, Popo, the nose tackle. the wide receiver, Troy Franklin, I can pronounce Franklin, and the quarterback, Kyrie Jackson, they are opting out. And there are still several other potential opt-outs that you need to be paying attention to on this. Liberty finished the season undefeated, only went 3-2 against the spread in the last 5. Oregon finished the year 4-1 straight up. Of course, that loss in the Pac-12 title game, but also went 3-2 against the spread in their last 5 games. Liberty 3-1 straight up, 4-0 all time in 4-0 against the spread all time in bowl games. Oregon is 3-2 straight up, 2-3 against the spread in their last 5 bowls. Parker, let's start with you here. if you just look at raw stats, this looks like an incredible matchup, right? In the last 6 weeks, Liberty is number one in offensive success rate. Oregon is number two. The issue is on the other side of the ball. Liberty provides basically no resistance. They're number 104 in defensive success allowed. Oregon is number 21. When you look at net points per drive, though, you know, Liberty, number eight, Oregon, number one. I cannot wait to see Jamie Chadwell's offense against a real defense. What have you got for this one?
Yeah, at full strength, I have this Oregon by 28. So do with that what you will here. I think the motivation factor for Oregon is really, really hard to quantify there overall. One thing that should really stand out and kind of be the difference here, Oregon has allowed some rushing success. And Liberty is first in the nation at raw rushing success rate. 53.6% of their rushes are successful. Obviously, you got to adjust that for some opponent quality. But Oregon's defense is 59th, allowing a 42.3% rushing success rate. So if Liberty can kind of get anything on the ground to free up some of those explosives against maybe some backup secondary players, maybe they could dial up some plays. I am a little bit pessimistic. I think I mentioned this yesterday about when I talked about Hugh Freeze and time. I am a little bit pessimistic about the Chadwell offense with time to prepare for it, because so much of what they do is just, oh, what the hell is happening here? And so I think Oregon with some time can maybe avoid getting stuck necessarily, but Liberty's super selective in the run game. 9.9% rush rate over expected. That's 123rd in the nation. They're second on early down ZPA. They're fourth on third and fourth down success rate. So really, really been good. I was looking at some splits for Liberty again, because we're just trying to find, like, is there anything that leads me one direction or the other here? I was trying to get some weird math about a total of, like, all right, let's say Liberty scores on the scripted drives. Let's say they score on drive one, and then coming out of the half, they score on the first one there. You've got 14. What do I need Oregon to do against this defense to make a total that's in the 60s make sense here? And I'm not quite sure I can get there. Again, motivation and opting out. Is Nick's going to be on a pitch count? Bucky Irving, is he going to play the entire game? Just again, running backs a very high injury possibility there. I'm not sure. And without Franklin, you know, 25% of their targets on offense, how will they distribute those? I just couldn't talk myself into anything here. I think this is about as one-sided as a bowl game as we're going to get. You know, Georgia versus the husking shell of Florida State, notwithstanding. And I really am interested in kind of Liberty's defense. I mean, they're 98th in EPA per pass, 99th in EPA per rush. And I thought, okay, maybe teams are exploiting one of the teams are passing 3.3 percentage points more than average against Liberty. They're really attacking them through the air. And Oregon, of course, as we know, super pass heavy, 8.8%. So I could see this getting blown open. Without knowing the motivation pregame, I think this is a good candidate for live betting, because I'm not sure there's a total it's going to get to in game that's going to be insane in terms of the line for Oregon there. And, you know, if Oregon comes out super flat, hey, maybe Liberty's going to ragtag and get the moral victory, by covering here. But this is pretty one-sided. This is team number two in EPA per play margin versus team number 43, and that's being a little bit generous to Liberty's schedule, frankly.
The team totals here are 42.5 to 24.5. So I don't feel great about either one of those, really.
No, I don't love it.
Yeah, because you could see Liberty scoring four touchdowns. Kyle, let's move over to you. We've seen these teams get stuck in these G5 New Year's Six games after they miss out on title shots, right? We saw that in the past. And Oregon just did the exact same thing, right? Because if they beat Washington, they're in the playoff. They lose to Washington. And now you got to go to the desert to play a really crazy style of offense with the Liberty Flames. And how excited are you going to be? The examples I've got down here, Tulane beat USC last year. Georgia failed to cover against Cincinnati 3 years ago. UCF famously knocked off Auburn, who missed out because they lost in the SEC championship game. Houston beat Florida State in 2015. It's not like these G5 teams haven't figured this stuff out before, right? Oregon does have Bo Nix playing, and everything felt good for the Ducks early, but now you got more opt-outs coming. It's hard to know where the motivation is. What are your thoughts on this, Kyle?
Thinking when you were saying that has to include the UCF national championship there that year. That was quite the year. You know, this is a tough one, guys, because if you just said, you know, Oregon was going to have everybody, still going to be, you know, full out playing. You'd have to bet team total over on Oregon. Like they could score as much as they wanted to if everybody's playing. The Liberty defense hasn't seen anything like this, and Liberty gave up a ton of points against teams with far worse offenses than this. But motivation is critical in bowl season handicapping. We've talked about that a lot. Oregon missing quite a few guys. You know, it's kind of surprising Bo Nix is playing. I like to see it. The strength of schedule difference here, like you got to make massive adjustments because Liberty 133rd, according to Sagarin, Oregon 25th. And basically Oregon looked amazing against everybody except for Washington this year, kind of their kryptonite. Oregon was first in yards per play margin, not very close for the season. And I think two excellent offensive lines here. That's kind of the strength of both teams. The run defense is a bit of a weakness for both teams. I would definitely lean the over if I had to bet a total, but you're talking 67 points. It's not easy to get to 68 points. You know, one bad quarter, you can't do it. Over is my lean, so high. I would certainly lean Oregon team total over 42.5. But if Oregon gets ahead by a decent amount, shuts it down, puts in the backups, it wouldn't surprise me at all. So just a lean for me.
There's a chance that both teams could just run the ball a ton and, you know, we end up with field goals. We could go well under the 67, right? There's a chance that both teams could break explosive plays on the ground. Maybe Oregon thrashes these guys, or maybe they don't care and, you know, Liberty is able to exploit it. Like, who knows? So because of that, we've got our leans, but we're staying off it for official plays. So no official plays on this game. We do have two more games left for today, but I want you to go ahead and give me that truck graphic one more time. If you want a shot at winning the Tough Truck, you got to put your guess in the chat for which one of us has got that golden ticket today. Make sure, of course, to like the video, subscribe to the channel, all that good stuff. But yes, do yourself a favor, get entered in to win the Tough Truck. This thing is awesome. Like, I have seen the pictures of it. It's pretty cool. I kind of want the truck myself. I wish that I could win it on the show, but I don't think that would be ethical. Make sure and drop in your questions for Q&A in the chat. If you are not watching live, put them in the comments, and we're going to respond to as many of those as possible through the week leading up to New Year's Day. All right, game number 5 here. Oh, yes, the biggins. We don't have to worry about transfer portal or draft prep or any of that mess for these. This is the best on the best. We're going to start with the Rose Bowl. CFP semifinal number 1. This was Monday, January 1st, 5 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN. It's the granddaddy of them all, where we are going to see the number 1 ranked undefeated Big Ten champion Michigan Wolverines taking on the number 4 SEC champion Alabama Crimson Tide. Michigan currently a 1.5-point favorite at BetUS, the total sitting at 45 on this. Michigan lost their right guard, Zach Zinter, for the season during the Ohio State game. The Alabama running back, Jace McClellan, didn't play in the SEC championship. And Michigan cornerback, Will Johnson, missed the Big Ten title game. We've not seen an injury report on either team yet. I would assume that both of those guys are going to be playing, except for Zinter, of course. But we'll see. These two teams last played in the Citrus Bowl after the 2019 season. Alabama won that one 35-16. Both teams have won double-digit games in a row. Alabama went 4-1 against the spread in the last 5. Michigan went 3-2 against the number. Bama, 11-3 straight up in their last 14 postseason games. That includes winning 6 straight CFP semifinals, and that includes one as the number 4 seed back in 2017, so they've been in this spot before. Michigan, 0-6 straight up and against the spread in their last 6 postseason games. That includes 2 straight semifinal losses as the higher-ranked team. Kyle, we'll start with you here. I mentioned this when we did our early preview, right? My full season stats would have Michigan favored by 10.5. My last 6-week stats would have Alabama favored by 11. That is a drastic shift. And it shows not only how much Alabama has improved, but also how much Michigan has dropped off, right? It's a different type of team than the Wolverines have had for the majority of the season, what they did when they actually went up against good competition. And this Alabama team is different than what the Wolverines have dealt with all year. What do you expect in the Rose Bowl here, Kyle?
You know, Michigan, we talked about them a decent amount. And even in that game against Iowa, 3.3 yards per play. Of course, Iowa has a great defense, but You know, the blowout 26-0 was all about Iowa's turnovers, not about Michigan having success on offense. I mean, how many points do you think Michigan's going to score here? This is a Michigan offense that's been quite a bit worse than last year. The offensive line was already down quite a bit. Now they're without Zinter. Michigan 56 strength of schedule, according to Sagarin. Alabama 12th. Michigan was plus 17 in turnover margin this season. I think Michigan's advantage here is their defensive line and the pressure that they get on opposing quarterbacks. Alabama negative 5 in sack margin. Obviously, Milroe holds it quite a bit, runs around back there. That can lead to some of that. But I think the Alabama offensive line has improved a good amount throughout the course of the season. Gary would be able to judge that better than I would probably. But, you know, it looked like a major problem early. And while it may not be a strength now, it's at least not as bad as it looked like it would be. I do think Alabama will run Milroe a decent amount in this game. I don't know why they wouldn't. Michigan really hasn't had to go against good rushing quarterbacks. And I think that Milroe is so explosive. You know, they've kind of saved him up at times with the run game. I think this is the type of game where if you want to bet a prop here, probably Milroe rushing props over. I like best longest rush over because, you know, there could be some negative plays, certainly, of course. So I think I like him to bust one or two big ones and maybe he gets some negative plays as well. But in this one on the side, I think this is a tough side to bet. You know, Michigan's clearly a very good team. I trust Saban more than Harbaugh with extra time to prep. This is a Michigan offense that, you know, I think down the stretch they concern me. McCarthy comes up with some big plays when needed, but I don't know that he can just throw it around on Alabama. And do we think that Michigan's going to be able to just run it over and over again? It would surprise me. I don't think they can. So Alabama's working on inconsistency on offense, getting behind the chains a bit. I did take the under in this one on our early preview. That's definitely my favorite play in this one. So under 45.5, my favorite bet in this game. I'm going to let Gary and Parker take the sides here.
The rushing prop for Jalen Milroe in this one, 32.5, which is more than Donovan Edwards at 30.5. So, yeah, I could see it. I could see it. Parker, we'll move over to you. And Kyle, by the way, you talked about the Alabama offensive line. I think I would consider it a strength at this point with the way that they were getting off the ball against Georgia. I mean, they were mashing those guys like 5 yards into the backfield. It was wild to see considering what they were to begin the year, right? Just nuts. All right, so Parker, now over to you. Michigan's offense, number 81 in PPA per drive over the past 6 weeks. Alabama's defense, not great. They're number 46. Alabama's offense, on the other side, number 6 in PPA per drive, while Michigan's defense is number 26. Now, Jesse Minter's Wolverines defense has not seen a quarterback like Jalen Milroe this season, right? Kyle brought that up. But I don't know that Milroe has seen a defense like this one either. You know, I'm always curious about matchups. Parker, I'm curious what you're looking for here.
Yeah, I've got a couple that are kind of interesting, and a lot of it focuses on kind of how they're going to attack. So the question for Michigan, and we've talked about this. I would encourage you, if you're listening now, go back and watch. We I think it's clipped in our YouTube playlist. We talked about this game early a couple weeks ago as well. I gave Alabama plus one. I'm going to stick with that and go Alabama plus 1.5 here. If I get a half point, I don't know why I wouldn't double dip. But looking at Michigan, the biggest concern for them is playing four quarters against a team that can't just turtle up and dominate. So if you look at Michigan's rush rate by quarter, first quarter, 54.5, second quarter, 45.7% rush, third quarter, 56.7% rush, and in the fourth quarter, 67.9% of their plays are rushes there. Michigan's a little bit hard to figure out statistically because all season, even before they had kind of the bump in competition the last few weeks, what they would do is just get up and sit. That's all they needed to do. It was fine, and they would just run the ball and lean on their guys. Their offense is still 6th in EPA per play, but they're rushing 2.1 percentage points more than the average team. So can they sustain an offense where if Alabama's rush defense kind of doesn't allow them to get, and you know, what was it against Penn State, an 8-minute touchdown drive in the second half where they ran the ball 16 times or whatever? you know, if they don't have that weapon, how are they going to respond? J.J. McCarthy is going to have the game of his life here, which Alabama's passing defense is 10th in EPA per play allowed. So that's certainly going to be a hard mix. So what's the mix of run pass that Michigan lands on, kind of knowing that their whole season they've been sleepwalking a little bit? Now, that doesn't excuse they looked bad against Iowa. They just did. And we knew that Iowa was a much worse team. I think at times against Ohio State, they were very beatable. And Ohio State just couldn't capitalize. And again, that's part of being a good team in college football, is not letting your opponent capitalize on your mistakes per se. But so I think there are definitely some chinks in Michigan's armor for sure. But I'm mostly just interested, can they play four quarters without being able to rely on just that big beefy drive, especially with Zenter out in the run game as well. Now for Alabama, one stat that I really have just been trying to wrap my head around with Michigan all season, they are 125th in rush rate over expected against. That means teams are rushing 6.0 percentage points more than average against Michigan than they would against any other team. And I think that's really interesting, and a kind of a testament to Michigan's pass defense. Michigan's pass defense is third in EPA per play allowed. Their rush defense is 13th, both of those allowing negative plays. Alabama, 24th in passing, 43rd in rushing on offense. But with Milrow and the ability to have an option of a run or a pass, with that scrambling ability he does possess, with that kind of two-man game in the screen game, can they actually stretch out Michigan's pass defense in such a way that compromises both the pass defense and the rush defense? I think, like Kyle said, I don't know that Michigan has seen a quarterback of this caliber in terms of the dual threat ability and in terms of the dink and bomb. Like, Alabama's not going to force the alley. They're not going to force throws in conflict. They're going to say it's there or we're running. They're going to say it's deep or it's incomplete. And that might spread Michigan around, bringing that rush rate over expected way, way down, passing a little bit more credibly, and then being able to have that threat of Milrow. You're talking about pressure. You're talking about gravity. That all leans towards Alabama. Alabama, the hotter team. Alabama, the more talented team. Alabama, the coaching advantage. I'm going to go with Alabama plus money here.
I'm going to do the same thing. Nick Saban is 11-1 straight up in playoff or title games where he's got, you know, a month or so to prepare, more than 3 weeks. And this time we're going to get him as an underdog. Like, I am certainly on the Bama side here. There's ways that you can talk yourself into Michigan, right? But I don't think any of them make a whole lot of sense when you look at what this team from Tuscaloosa has turned into. So let's lock it in. Parker and I are both going to take Alabama plus the 1.5. Kyle, of course, previously played the under 45.5 on the early preview show. Kyle, it's sitting at 45 right now. Would you recommend a 45?
Yeah, I mean, just half a point worse. I mean, if it falls 45, you tie instead of win, I would definitely still recommend it.
Okay, that works. Let's go to the last game. Game number 6. Oh, yes. The nightcap. CFP semifinal number 2 on ESPN, 8:45 p.m. Eastern time. It is the Sugar Bowl down on the Bayou in New Orleans, Louisiana, where we are going to see the number 3 ranked Big 12 champion Texas Longhorns going up against the number 2 ranked Pac-12 champions, the undefeated Washington Huskies. Texas, a 4-point favorite right now at BetUS with a total of 63.5. Surprisingly, Texas does have a relatively important transfer that has opted out of the playoffs, and that is the backup quarterback, Malik Murphy. He won't be available as he has decided to transfer somewhere that he's going to be able to get some playing time. I believe that he announced he's going to Duke to play for Manny Diaz. And that's just a casualty of the college football calendar, which is a complete travesty, and we don't have time to dive into that. But regardless, this is a rematch of last season's Alamo Bowl. Washington won that game 27-20 as a 2.5-point underdog. In the last 5 games this season, Texas went 3-1-1 against the spread. Washington went 3-2 against the number. Before last season, Texas had won and covered in 4 straight bowls. But of course, Steve Sarkisian, he is only 2-3 straight up in bowl games in his career. Kalen DeBoer, we have talked about this on the show before, he is 103-11 all time. And while he's only 1-0 in bowl games, because he continues to win everywhere he goes, so he keeps jumping jobs, he is 17-2 straight up in NAIA playoff games. This dude knows how to win under pressure. Now, let's start with you, Parker, on this one. We know Texas has a weakness in the secondary. But when you start diving into these numbers, Washington's defensive deficiencies are significantly worse. Number 129 PPA allowed per rush, number 66 per pass. There is a chance that the most valuable players for Texas might be the running back, C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue. Now, everything's telling me that I should take Texas here, but DeBoer has proven that he can win any number of different ways. Give me some numbers here. Talk some sense to us. Parker, what have you got on this one?
Yes, so I'm going to give you some stats, and I'm going to get weird, and then I'm going to make like a play that I think Kyle would be proud of in my reasoning. So I specifically haven't told you guys why I'm making this play, so that I can do it on air, so that I can just get that proud moment from Kyle here in a minute. Looking at this, I really think that it's kind of a bad matchup for Washington, specifically on the defensive side of things, because Texas has a huge weakness on offense. We've seen it all season. We've talked about it all season. They, for the life of them, cannot finish drives well. And even we saw, I'm saying it a million times, the Texas Tech game, the Big 12 championship, they were like 1-for-8 on scoring touchdowns in when they crossed the 40. So they're 106th in points per quality possession. Washington is 100th in points per quality possessions allowed on defense. They have been very bad about the explosive touchdown, which mitigates some of Texas's issues when they cross the 40, and about finishing those drives when they do allow defenses to cross the 40. That is very problematic, and really, really kind of mitigates Texas's biggest weakness. Now, early downs EPA, Texas is 17th in the nation on first and second down explosiveness. Washington is 73rd allowed. So again, we see Texas staying ahead of the chains, not forcing Quinn Ewers to make and press and push those situations where he might throw a turnover like we saw in the Oklahoma game. Texas generates a ton of quality possessions, and they'll be able to finish them better against Washington. I think that Texas will run a little bit more against this Washington defense. Their pass defense is 16th. Their rush defense is 65th. What do we know when we see a big split like that? It's been a little bit since I've had to point one of those out. But we think about selection issues, right? And teams are passing against Washington for 4.9 percentage points more than average. So that run game will only decrease that rushing efficiency as well. Texas can run here, especially we know the RPOs that Sarkisian loves so much frees up to, you know, I mean, you're just absolutely in hell when it's, hey, we have numbers in the box and you either have to go one-on-one to Xavier Worthy or come try to tackle our running back. So I really like what Texas is going to be able to do. They're multiple on the in the wideout room. It really feels like, you know, despite the hiccup at Oklahoma, despite the injuries with Quinn Ewers, Texas really was what they were advertised as this year for the first time in a very, very long time. We thought, hey, they're super talented up front. Hey, they've got a returning quarterback. Hey, they're super multiple on the outside. And that's with Jonathan Brooks getting hurt too, the running back who's so versatile as well. I will say for Malik Murphy, it is sad that he doesn't get to participate in the bowl game. Hopefully they're sending him some swag, honestly, because like there's some like monetary and material benefit that he's losing. But again, the calendar is messed up. He started and won 2 games for a team that's competing to win a national title. So that is truly a travesty there. But you know, Ewers filling, you know, Ewers back, Ewers healthy, getting hot. I think they've got a lot of time to just put a lot of different things together against Washington. Washington's toughest games came against Oregon, and no disrespect to Oregon and their offensive scheme, but we understand why people call Bo Nix a checkdown merchant. We understand why that offense is so simple, because they have playmakers. Texas here, a lot more complex, can put a lot more looks here as well. On the other side of the ball, Washington, you know, struggles in the run game. They're 42nd in EPA per rush. Texas is 2nd in EPA per rush allowed. They're so stout up front, I'm not sure Washington's going to be able to generate consistent rushing success, let alone explosiveness, not to mention Texas in the past game, you know, has been kind of strong here. So the play I'm going to have, I'm leaning towards Texas here, but I'm scared about their ability to finish it. So I'm not interested in a side, like I said before, but I am going to make a play here. I'm going to go with the under. I'm going to take under, I believe that's 63.5 right now. And here's my logic. Short, simple, sweet. Kyle, I hope you're proud of me here. Washington's gone over in only 46.2% of their games this season. Texas has gone over in only 38.5. We're looking at two teams who are going to run a little bit more, I think, than pass. I'm going to go with pace. I'm going to go with the trends, and I'm going to go an under in Texas, Washington.
That's awesome, because that's certainly a contrarian play, right? These two teams, same kind of teams, had the same quarterbacks, had the same game plan, had the same da-da-da-da-da. 27-20 last year, ended with a total of 47. So we have seen this before. Kyle, I said this before the Pac-12 title game, right? The numbers point to the other team, and I was talking to Parker about this. Washington has Kalen DeBoer, and in college football, coaching is a massive advantage, especially with almost a month to prep for an opponent, right? Washington had several nagging injuries after the win over Oregon in the middle of the season. I think 4 weeks now is plenty of time to get a lot of that healed up. Now, the same can be said for Texas, and we know Sark can call some really sick stuff when he's had time to dissect the defense. The matchups are fascinating here. Where are you starting your breakdown, Kyle?
Gary, I mean, I think you're right when you say Kalen DeBoer, he's won everywhere he's been. You know, you have tons of time to get ready. Like, how many teams would actually keep the coach they have rather than wanting Kalen DeBoer to be their coach? DeBoer is fantastic. You know, you couldn't say very many coaches at all before you get to Kalen DeBoer. Excellent. He's great at prepping for a game. The players love to play for him. I mean, as much as I think Sarkisian is a good coach, coaching advantage has to go to Kalen DeBoer. I mean, he's proven that time and time again. Having said that, I think Texas has a decent amount more talent than does Washington. And I think the single best unit in this game, Texas's run defense, Texas has been really good at stopping the run. I mean, this Texas defensive line might be the best in the country at stopping the run at this point. I think Texas's issues in the red zone definitely matter a lot. And I think that's where, you know, total of 63.5, everything has to go right. I am proud of Parker for taking this, like, contrarian under. It feels like something I should be doing, and my number is right about where it is there. So I'm going to pass on the total, but I'm going to be rooting for him. I think both teams will move the ball fairly well. Will both of them score touchdowns over and over again? This game, you know, we don't have any issues with motivation. We don't have to talk about motivation in a game like this. Higher intensity games usually trend under. You know, when the game means more, the defenses are ready to go. I think Washington's run defense really impressed me a lot in the Pac-12 title game. You know, they've gotten a little bit healthier. The question is, can they hold up a little bit here in this one? Because it's kind of the key to me. Can Texas run the football consistently over and over again? And Washington's D, they give up really high success rates, but they're explosives on defense. They haven't given up that many big plays. So I think that's important because of what Parker has said over and over again. And I'll say, you know, I thought Texas was going to get better at scoring touchdowns in the red zone. Like, I didn't think they could be that bad. And yet they continued to be that bad in the red zone over and over again. My favorite bet in this game, and I think this is the first one I've actually taken a prop on. We actually usually get a lot of questions, but props are usually not available when we do the show. And market-wide, there's quite a few numbers for Dylan Johnson under. I'm going to take Dylan Johnson under rushing prop here, under 74.5. I will say, I did bet this at a better number. This has been coming down. I would go ahead and bet this. I think it'll go down more. But I'm going to take Dylan Johnson under because I don't think Texas is going to give up the kind of rushing yards that Dylan Johnson has had recently. I think if you look at his stats in recent games, he ran at a higher volume than he probably will here. Washington at some point decides, you know, our biggest edge is passing. So we have to give up with this in the run game. And Dylan Johnson, unlikely to bust those big plays. So I'm going to take under 74.5 rushing yards there.
I do really like that play, right? Dylan Johnson impressed me against Oregon, for sure, because I did not think that they were going to be able to run the ball on Oregon. We did have Jesse jump in here. He said, is beating Oregon twice more impressive than beating Alabama once? And I think that the answer to that is yes, based on when they fell in the calendar, right? If you had beaten Alabama at the end of the season, I think that would be more impressive. But hey, you beat Oregon twice, one in the Pac-12 title game, one at your place in the middle of the season. Yeah, I think that's more impressive than what Texas had. But regardless, these are still two just incredible, incredible teams. I am likely going to have Washington with some pizza money here just because of Kalen DeBoer and the fact that this thing is over a touchdown. Or not over over a field goal, excuse me. Let's go in and lock in the actual official plays, though, okay? Parker is going to take the under 63.5. Kyle is going to take Washington running back Dylan Johnson under 74.5 rushing yards. That is a market number, market consensus right now. So, and it's going to keep coming down. As Kyle said, you might want to grab that one while you can. What a fun CFP we have got. I think we've got some really great matchups here. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be awesome. Let me say this before we get to Q&A and all that wonderful stuff. I think it would be too perfect for Texas the first time they get back to the national title game in, you know, 15 years or whatever it's been, for them to be able to play the game in Houston. So it kind of would make sense that Washington would show up and do something, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't want to get Texas fans too mad at me. For the last time today, if you've not already, like the video, subscribe to the channel. You guys know what to do with that. And of course, with every show, you guys know one of us is holding a golden ticket for an entry to the Tough Truck Contest. So let's go ahead and reveal who has got that bad boy today. Is it rigged? Is it not? I know Fox jumped in earlier. Kyle with the golden ticket. Of course, he's wearing the Longhorns hat. What? That's a good reaction, Parker. It's like the cartoon, like, ah, shucks. All right, production's going to toss the names from the chat that the guessed correctly into the metaphorical hat. We'll announce the winner after best bets. And, of course, you guys know if you win, hit up our team at BetUSTV on X and send them a DM and let them know that you are the person. So, there you go. Now, don't be trying to fool nobody by coming in and not being the right person, but regardless. Before we do best bets, let's jump into Q&A. And we got quite a few picks here, quite a few questions here. P.W. Riggs, who is a new member here, he said, hey, guys, what about the West Virginia-North Carolina game? And that one is going on today, and that number has moved significantly. West Virginia is now a 5.5-point favorite. I don't know if there's any other news that has come out. Kyle, have you seen anything? Or if people just wisened up to the idea that, yeah, North Carolina can still run the ball on West Virginia. Give me some thoughts. Kyle first and then Parker. What have we got left on those?
Larry and Parker, I was hoping you guys have some reason for why this line has moved so much. The total has gone from 54 up to 60.5. So a 6.5-point line move in not that much time. Somebody is just betting the over like it's free here. I do not know what to make of the total. You know, obviously so many key guys out on offense for North Carolina. West Virginia has had some games get really pointsy later in the season after they had a lot of low games. I would lean West Virginia minus the points here. I think Brown's team will at least be – Brown, that's funny. Brown's team will be – Neil Brown's team.
Since they're both Brown's team.
Brown's team is going to be ready to go. I mean, that's for sure.
Oh, yes.
No, I think West Virginia is going to be prepped for this one well. And I think he deserves a lot of credit, Neil Brown does, based on how expectations were so low. And he was, you know, 1 foot out the door, everybody was saying. They played very well this year. I think I would side with them to finish strong here.
Parker, what about you? 5.5, total of 60.5 now. Anything changed for you on this game?
I saw that Mac Brown said something about how he was really excited for the game because it's an opportunity for some of the young guys to play in front of their friends and family and get a chance, and they're, you know, really good energy and all that. I can't imagine that really influenced the line very much or moved anything at all. I still think that West Virginia's in a bowl because they played four of the five worst teams in the Big 12. I mean, their schedule did them so many favors this year. Houston, BYU, Cincinnati, Baylor, right? And they were 8-4. I mean, that's, you know, split that 2-2. They're not in this bowl here. So I think that it's good that they, you know, overcame the expectations for sure. I think the schedule probably did them a bunch of favors that was probably pretty foreseeable, honestly, and just kind of overlooked. But that being said, I really don't know that there's any new information that really has me excited about either side here. That's just a lot of points for a West Virginia team that I think has really, really benefited from opponents kind of blowing up. So I don't really have a strong lean here.
Next question is from Cooper Haney. He said, thoughts on Tulane and Virginia Tech. Tulane, too many opt-outs to stay in it. That one is, I think it already started, didn't it? Yeah, I think it just started. So it closed at Virginia Tech as a 13-point favorite with a total of 43. There's a reason why everybody's betting Virginia Tech, and that's because Tulane has, like, nobody. And Virginia Tech has a lot a lot of alums in the DMV, right? So who knows? Like, I think Virginia Tech's going to have a massive crowd advantage. I think they're fired up for this game. Motivation, big factor here. I think we said on the show last week, Kyle, anything under two touchdowns, we'd feel pretty good about Virginia. Isn't that right, Parker? Didn't we say that?
I had it at 10.5 and said that was pretty much where I wanted to sit. It was like 11, 10.5. And so I'm glad with the movement I got it there. I would be, yeah. I think Kyle had the team total, which I think would be the one that's how much that moved given the line move. And that's the one I think I'd be interested in for Tulane, because I just don't think they're going to score very much.
Yeah, that team total closed at 16.5 for Tulane. So Kyle certainly got the better number on that one. Let's see. Kyle, you had team total under 17.5. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So we'll see what happens with that ballgame. R.L. Flynn jumped in. He wants to know about the FCS National Championship game predictions. And we still got a little ways before that game. What is it? South Dakota State and Montana? It's 12.5, I believe, is the line on that. I would lean the Jackrabbits, unfortunately, because, God, they are destroying everybody. Other than that, I got nothing. I mean, anything under two touchdowns on South Dakota State, like I put half a unit on South Dakota State already.
I would have opened it at 17 for South Dakota State. And I think that it's important to look at how Montana beat North Dakota State, because they did not beat them with offense at all. There is not a lot of juice on the Montana offense. Their defense is really, really good, but I think South Dakota State could put up, 30 and win the game by 20 at that point, just with how Montana's doing. And I mean, Montana 6-1 and one score wins. South Dakota State's only played 2 1 score games all season. Montana needed overtime to advance in the last two rounds of the playoffs. Montana won't have home field advantage this time. There will be no snow. So all of that, I think, just swings everything further in South Dakota State's favor.
Kyle, what about you? Have you, have you dove into that game yet? What's the word there?
I don't handicap FCS, so I don't want to pretend I know something when I really don't. So I really have nothing on that one. I do see Cooper in the chat says that Tulane scored a defensive touchdown. If so, then that was a really bad start for a low team total under.
I think he got called back, didn't it? I don't have it on. I thought it got called back. We'll see. Yeah, hopefully not. Hopefully not. Don the Don jumped in. Q&A, why is Bama getting all the money and the tickets, and yet the line is still -1.5? Fishy or no? So here is what happens in bowl season. There is not enough actual money coming in on these games. So the reason that you see these lines go absolutely bonkers on the day of the game or the day before the game, or even in some cases like a couple of days before, where you saw the Oklahoma State line, we gave it out last week at Oklahoma State +2. It's now Oklahoma State -3.5. Some of that has to do with news. Some of it has to do with when the actual higher limits open up. So when people can put down significantly more money, that's when you start to see a lot of movement. Sometime around Saturday or Sunday, I would imagine you're going to see Alabama end up being a favorite. But as it sits right now, I don't think the money is that off, because they haven't taken that much money on these CFP games, at least I would imagine. So, Kyle, am I explaining that correctly? Is that kind of what's going on here?
I mean, we're seeing that with a lot of the other games too, Gary. I mean, we've seen massive line moves in some of these other games late. Like, look at today's games, even the Oklahoma State. I mean, that thing was +2, gone up to 3.5. Oklahoma State was taking a lot of bets earlier, and it wasn't moving much. And now at once it moves a lot. I think Bama will probably close a favorite in this game. And I don't really like the, since I've been handicapping for a long time, at the very beginning, I would have said fishy line, what do you do? But I don't really like the fishy line talk, just because it just makes it seem like the odds makers are setting a trap. And I don't think that's really how it goes. So I think, they put the number where they think it should be, and it is what it is. I don't think it's a setup or anything like that. So I think Bama will probably close a favorite here. It's not too hard to get a game to flip from -1.5 to -1.5 the other way.
That's the biggest thing for some of these limits, right? I know Circa out in Vegas is one of the bigger ones. Their limit before you get to a certain time period is like $3,000 on a game. So $3,000 on a spread. But then you get to just a couple of days before the game and all of a sudden it opens up and you can put down $10,000. And then the day of the game, you can put down $50,000 on the game or whatever it may be, right? Whatever that number is, depending on the book, et cetera. So when you start dealing with people putting down that kind of money, that's when they really start flipping the lines. So yeah, Kyle, I think that's, and Parker, you got anything to toss in on this about maybe this line being fishy or no, or you agree with
that? Yeah, you guys are the best guys. Just, I will say to everyone in the comments, just because I saw a tweet about the Kansas game last night that really irked me. Don't be the Vegas knows this is rigged guy. Be smarter than that. That's all I'll say about that.
Yep. Agreed. Kenneth Collins jumped in. He said, Q&A, thanks for a great year. Bet Texas State to win the Sun Belt. Do we do that now for next year? I don't think they've got next year's lines out, but I mean, maybe. Like, they look really good. I don't know what their roster is going to look like because we got a whole nother transfer portal window that is going to open up in the spring. But yeah, why not? Parker, what about you? Thoughts on Texas State? You were all over them to begin this year. What do you think for next year?
Gary, here's what I'll say. Make sure you subscribe to the BetUS College Football Show YouTube channel and have alerts on so you know the second that we come out with our preseason best bets.
Yes, 100%. Next week, by the way, we are going to, I know we're previewing the national title game next Tuesday, but we are also going to recap what we did in the futures markets and whatnot before the season began. Because we were pretty good this year. Like, not to toot our own horns, but we did pretty good this year. Like, I was very happy with that. It helped me significantly since the games were not on my side for certainly the first, like, 9-10 weeks of the season. So, yes, the futures, always good. Make sure that you join us in October and, well, June, not October, June, July, and August for those. October, you're going to be here anyway. So we appreciate that. Let's see. Is there anything else that we want to... that we want to jump in on.
Can I give my serious answer about Texas State real quick, too, because I just thought of it. I put it in the chat.
But yes.
There's no reason to tie your money up right now in the age of the transfer portal because they could have a great plan that is absolutely a Sun Belt championship caliber team next year. And the transfer portal and injuries and opt-outs and off-field stuff could all happen between now and February when markets are really opening. So, like, I don't think it makes a ton of sense to tie your money up right now. You know, just I would save on that until we have a little bit more of an informational edge.
That is a fantastic answer. Don't tie your money up right now a year ahead of time. Like, that's bananas. If you want to do that, you could just toss that $2 into a savings account and just let it kind of build up a little bit. So by the time you go to bet, you could probably have like $3.20 or something. Like,
buy some Bitcoin.
All right. Let's see. I think that's going to wrap it up for Q&A for today. We obviously can't do every single question live. If we didn't get to yours, put it in the comments. Make sure, we'll jump in there and we'll respond to as many as we possibly can. Or you can also toss a question in next Tuesday when we jump in for the national title game. Let's go ahead and do our best bets from today's show. A recap. Parker. Oh, yes. I love that. 6 games today. Parker got 4 bets. Who are you trusting today, my friend?
I should have just had a play on every game just to round it out there. I've got LSU minus 10, Iowa plus 6.5, Alabama plus 1.5, and then I'm going to go Texas Washington under 63.5.
I am going to take Iowa plus 6.5 in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl, and I'm going to take Alabama plus the 1.5 against Michigan in the Rose Bowl. Kyle, who have you got for us today?
Cheez-It Citrus Bowl just sounds crazy, Gary. Alabama and Michigan under 45.5 from the early show that we did. And I'm also going to take Dylan Johnson under 74.5 rushing yards.
All right. Now that best bets are, of course, out of the way, you guys know, claim your 125% sign-up bonus at BetUS and your 30 risk-free bets for 30 years of BetUS. Of course, BetUS giving away the tough truck. Let's see who the winner of today's free entry is. P.W. Riggs, And I love the way he did this. Kyle has the ticket, I hope. Congratulations, PW. You are today's winner. Contact us on Twitter, at BetUSTV. Send your DM over there to claim your entry. Now, if you didn't guess correctly, you can still win the truck. We're giving away one entry on every college football show. Of course, the NFL shows as well, the soccer shows, all that. All the BetUS shows, you can tune in for that. So head over to BetUSTV.com/toughtruck and find out more information. You can keep an eye, of course, on the latest odds over at BetUSTV.com/odds. And you can join in the action at BetUSTV.com/join. Gentlemen, that is going to do it for today's show. We went through all 41 bowl games this season. Not bad. And then we still got to knock out the national title game. We're going to have two national title shows. One on the day of the game. One next Tuesday, immediately after, I mean like 12 hours after the Sugar Bowl gets finished. So make sure and join us again next Tuesday, January 2nd, to preview that national title game. Set your reminders. That way you join us live. You can get your chance at winning that BetUS Tough Truck. Whew, the season is starting to wind down. So let me again tell all of you that are watching how much we appreciate you being here each and every week. This community is an absolute blast to be a part of, and you guys make it happen. So thank you from the bottom of our crazy little hearts here. You can, of course, follow the dudes on X. Kyle is at Kyle Hunter Picks. Parker is at Stats of War. And you can follow me at Winning Cures. With that said, for BetUS, where the game begins, God bless college football, and we will see you all again next week.